Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Bankroll Burners, the podcast for poker players who can't stop getting it in bad. I'm Mike.
And I'm Josh.
And we are here, as always, to bring you some badly played poker hands, to discuss them, to dissect them, to learn from one another, and to, at the end of the day, not get any better at the game of No Limit Texas Hold'em.
Sounds good to me. Well, speaking of which, you know, I did decide to play a 1-3 session rather than sort of the 2-5 I've been playing. Just didn't want to deal with the reggae table. And let me tell you, the table I played at was just fantastic. I had a great night. I think I actually wound up with a small loss, but the table was just fantastic. I had a guy, like, berate me, but in a joking, you know, in a way that he obviously was not trying to berate me, but he basically said, "Wow, so you'll raise 20 with aces, but 25 with ace king." In, like, you know, where basically I raised to 20 over some limps and no straddle at one point, and I happened to have aces. And then I raised to 25 over a limp in a straddled pot, and this guy, like, jokingly observed, "Wow, I can't, why'd you raise," you know, and the same player had said when I had aces, he was like, "Oh, you totally, I didn't put you on aces because you only made at 20 pre-flop." So it was a great table.
Well, I'm glad that you're back at the stakes where we belong.
It is just much more fun, you know? It's like everyone just kind of... It does depend. A good 2-5 table can definitely feel really nice as well. And there are obviously a lot of low-stakes tables where there are a lot of, like, really shit rags. But thankfully, I did not encounter that. And there are so many tables that I think I probably could have hopped around if need be to try and find something a little more enjoyable. And that's kind of my plan going forward. But to get right into it...
Please do.
Where are we starting? I guess we'll start... These are just two very strange hands. So in this particular hand, the straddle is going to be on. It was on sporadically. I kind of default to in these 1-3 games, so I will happily throw the straddle on if anyone else is straddling. I prefer not to be the only one doing it. But if even one other person is doing it, I'll happily throw it on, because it often entices people to do it, keeps the guy who's doing it, and that just helps kind of build the action.
Yeah, I mean, in my sense, like, I like to be deep, so, like, I've sort of stopped auto-straddling like I used to, but I tend to, like, try to really encourage straddles in tables that are, excuse me, that are otherwise really, like, poor. So, like, right. If it's, like, a way to get the action going. But yep. If the action's already good, it's like, who cares? So.
Exactly. That's the other thing, too. But also, sometimes it's like, sometimes I also, like, go the other way, where if the action's really, really bad, I'm like, this table just doesn't deserve my straddle.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, in this particular hand, the straddle is on. There is one limp from the low jack, and I look down in the cutoff at ace-king of diamonds. So, of course, I raise it up to 25.
1-3-6, low jack limp. You make it 25. What is the effective stack?
Oh, here? It starts out right around 500, which is also the buy-in cap for the game.
All right, sounds good.
I should have said that. Oh, so, you know, really under 100 straddles deep. Mm-hmm. So I've got ace king of diamonds. Of course, I'm bumping it up. Make it 25. My standard open in a straddled pot is 20, so adding on 5 for the limper. And only the straddler calls. The low jack limper actually winds up folding.
Nice.
Like a nit.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting here. You think about, like, what is the range? Like, this is not that uncommon of a spot where, like, there's a limper and then, like, just, like, the big blind calls.
Right.
You know, and they still got someone behind them. They typically, you know, I mean, it definitely caps their range a lot. Like, they will just never have anything strong here, so.
Well, I mean, it is, to be fair, this is certainly a table where I could expect people to be flatting with all sorts of hands, both too weak and too strong. You know, then you would expect, you know, could be flatting with some random suited bad gappers or, like, you know, jacks.
Yeah, definitely.
So, okay. That's about the range I put this guy on.
No, that's fine. I mean, that's a range, as long as you put him on some range. So, okay. So we're like 55 in the pot, and what's the flop?
And so the flop is going to come out ace of hearts, eight of clubs, deuce of hearts. So pretty dry board aside from the flush draw. Ace, eight, deuce with a couple hearts.
And you've got...
I've got ace king of diamonds.
Yeah,
so no
great hand.
Yeah, so it is a good hand. And when my opponent checks to me, I decide to throw out a bet of 20. I think I probably could go a little bigger here, but I don't mind just kind of keeping it small on a board this disconnected.
Yeah, I do think it's interesting. A lot of times on ace high boards, you are allowed to size up because you shouldn't be c-betting them quite as often.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, when there is a flush draw, you are supposed to not size up as much because your opponent can continue with some flush draws instead of continuing with some really junky hands. Like, you know, and the theory behind this, as I understand, is, you know, on ace eight deuce rainbow, your opponent simply has to continue with, you know, really crappy hands because they have to continue with something. But right. So you can size up a bit and kind of take advantage of that. But on a flush draw board, you know, they have a million flush draws they can have here.
Right. And especially live too, I would say, you know, you can probably, a good live exploit in that case is to kind of over bluff on like these super dry boards, just because people won't find the defends. You know, people are much more likely to defend when they have something like overcards, and they kind of recognize those as sort of live outs. But on a board like ace eight deuce rainbow, opponents probably aren't going to defend, you know, 9-10 or 10-9 with a backdoor, you know, which is probably a good candidate, right? Where you have three to a flush, three to a straight that you probably just have to call down in order to be, or not call down, but defend the flop so that you don't just get over bluffed out of the pot. So, yeah, certainly possible here. But anyway, here I decide to go 20. Just want to keep it small, kind of keep my range wide, keep the opponent's range wide, and he calls pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's all fair. So now we're at around 100, and we've got like 450 behind, so piles behind.
Yep. And here on the turn, it's going to come out a relative brick. It's the 10 of diamonds. Obviously, it is a high card. Could introduce some, like, you know, additional straight draws, some two pairs if my opponent's playing a hand like ace 10. And at this point, my opponent decides to lead out for 25.
What? Okay. I mean, I pretty much want to get stacks in here, so I'm just trying to think, how do we size to accomplish that?
Right. I mean, I think I almost always have the best hand. I just don't think my opponent can be that strong. I don't really know, you know, so I kind of think about making a, you know, making a small raise here just to, you know, kind of keep all his hands in. Like, I don't want our opponent to be able to fold a hand like an ace. And that seems like the only hand that we're likely going to be able to get two more streets of value from.
It's interesting, but why do you think that he'll call like a, I mean, is your thinking that you were, there's just literally no way that you would get be able to get stacks in versus like a weaker ace?
Possibly. We might just be too deep, you know, pretty deep SPR, you know. I'm not sure, you know, if I make it like 125 and the river comes in a brick and I jam, you know, am I going to be able to get called by an ace? Maybe. But also, I do, as we've kind of pointed out, he is pretty capped to having mostly pretty junky aces. Like, maybe he's got ace jack and ace queen here. He probably does have ace jack and ace queen here quite a bit.
What would you do here with king jack of hearts?
I mean, I'd probably plan on like raising small and then, like, you know, betting quite large on the river.
So you're not going to try to put apply max pressure here with your miss, with your bluffs?
I don't know. I mean, I just don't think it's, I don't know. I mean, it's, I guess we could like pot it for like, you know, 175. I guess we could. I guess I just expect people to be over folding here in this spot a fair amount.
So, I mean, I guess the question from like a balance standpoint, you're saying you maybe would take that big, like you would take a big sizing with a bluff, but you should therefore take a big sizing with your value, but you're going to deviate because of his tell with like his donking, his small donk. You're going to deviate with value and just make some small.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I mean, that seems, it's not fine deviation to me. So what are you thinking? Just like 60?
So I can wind up going 75, which I think is about a third pot. You know, just kind of like keep it small, keep his range in. Tough for him to fold, you know, any sort of hand here at this point.
Okay.
But I do see the point in raising large too. It's live poker. It is hard to get people to stack off with like one pair.
I don't know. It depends. Yeah, it depends on the player and your image, but
yeah, I
sure.
Didn't have that many reads on this player. He was playing pretty ABC at this point. I mean, he was playing kind of like live reggae, you know, live player at this point. He was just like, I don't know. I hadn't seen anything out of line prior to this hand.
Okay, I will say though, if you're going to go something, I feel like 75 is big enough that he will fold off some weak aces. probably. So I feel like I might, if you're going to go with this exploit, I might even go a little smaller.
It's interesting, because I've kind of felt like, oh, this is like a third pot. It's like, you know, easy to pay.
Yeah. I guess in my head, they're thinking about it relative to their bet size. They might see as like, oh, it's 3x, like that's big or something. But I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, maybe. Or yeah, so maybe it does make sense to go bigger even here and just like put max pressure on, because some people do just hate to fold. It's true. It's true.
And obviously, I would take a large sizing, but I don't know that that's correct. I personally would. I could see a merit for a small sizing. I feel like 75 is too in between somehow. But okay, what does he do?
So he calls pretty quickly. So, you know, dollar signs flashing in my eyes.
Yay.
And now we've got 250 in the middle. We still got quite a lot behind, like 380-ish. So, you know, 1 point. Pot and a half.
Yeah.
And the river rolls off a pretty big brick. It's the three of spades. So the final board, ace of hearts, eight of clubs, deuce of hearts, 10 of diamonds, three of spades. The only thing it really changes is if our opponent, of course, has ace three, or if he's gotten this far with a hand like four, like five, four of hearts. The wheel does now come in. But obviously I'm definitely planning on betting this board, but I don't get to, as villain now donks again for 125.
Ooh, that's concerning.
Which is about half pot, and this puts me in quite a spot, because obviously I was planning on betting for value. I didn't think too long about folding here, but is there any merit to jamming?
No, I don't think so. I don't think you'll ever get called by a worse hand if you jam.
Yeah, I mean, that's reasonable. Except...
I'm thinking about folding, personally. This is, like, such a nutted line.
Well, it's interesting. It's almost less nutted because he donked small on the turn and called my small raise, rather than, like, checking and calling my chunky bet. You know what? Like, would he really want to lead out 25 with, like, a two-pair plus hand on the turn?
Right.
Like, you know, if he checked, right? Because it's interesting, right? Because there was like 100 in the pot or something on the turn. And if he checked to me, I might take, you know, kind of a $75, or I probably would take a $75 or more sizing. But it's like, it's almost weaker for him to have bet so small himself and then called my raise that is much smaller in percentage of the pot versus calling my, like, you know, 75 to 150% whatever I wound up betting on the turn.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, I could see bricked hearts kind of playing this way.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing I was thinking, is the flush draw misses. Like, maybe he's got 4 or 5, maybe he's got 2 pair, but I don't really know that. You know, I am pretty high up in my range. Like, I do which beat, means- I also beat any, like, random ace X donks, which is, like, certainly possible. Like, people do sometimes just play top pair in weird ways.
I guess actually I was going to ask you, like, do you really think he ever, like, hasn't just an ace here, because I kind of don't.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Donks
for 125 on the river, I don't think he just has an ace. Like, I feel like this is either a bricked flush draw, which was trying to sort of buy a cheap river on the turn,
mm-hmm.
or some kind of nutted holding.
I can definitely see that. I was sort of thinking too, like, you know, I feel like a super strong hand probably raises the flop a lot, especially against a small sizing, you know. One thing that I would say live players are pretty good at, even ones, you know, who aren't necessarily studying or whatever, very good at attacking. Many live players often perceive small sizing as weakness versus as being, like, you know, board related.
Sure.
And, like, just wind up raising a lot. So it's, you know,
what if he has pocket tens? You know, where he's obviously not going to chuck raise flop.
Yeah. I mean, that's possible. Like, right, if he has pocket 10s or ace 10, then I will certainly be paying him off. But I just, yeah. I don't know. I just think he has enough, like, random crap. Maybe some ace X that just, like, wants to buy showdown. Or maybe he has ace queen and he thinks he's good. Like.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't think he has. I really am skeptical that he has ace X here. Maybe I'll eat my words. But I'm skeptical he has ace X. I do think that we probably are getting a reasonable price to call off here. You know, we're getting 3 to 1. It's like, does he have bricked hearts here 1 out of 4 times? Probably, yeah. So I think we can just call. I really don't think raising has any merit.
And also, obviously, we do have a lot of, like, ace X with a heart. Like, ace king, ace queen with a king or queen. Or ace jack, even, with, you know, with that card of hearts. So, like, and those we can, if we wanted to sort of, you know, do some sort of range analysis, that kind of puts us a little bit higher in our range because we don't have that suit.
Right, of course, not having a heart decreases the chance of our opponent, or increases the chances, rather, that our opponent is holding two hearts and has bricked his flush draw. So, okay, yeah, I think just calling is fine. What did you do?
I just called. Yeah, I mean, I was probably closer to raising than folding, to be honest, but I didn't do... I think that just calling is, like, always just what we have to do here with this hand.
Yeah, I think raising would be fairly punty, because I think his line is pretty polarized.
Well, he says, oh man, you must have an ace. I didn't think you had an ace, and flashes me a deuce as he mucks his hand.
Okay.
So I was like, all right. Like, I don't know. I just thought it was a weird line from him that I was totally not sure whether I did, you know, took the right play on. So.
Well, yeah, you weren't getting more if you raised.
So. No, I mean, yeah.
He was trying to blow you off something, I guess.
So. Yeah, I mean, maybe he thinks maybe my raise just looked bluffy to him, or he thought I had some, like, weird medium pair and a flush draw, or, you know, pocket pair between the aces and tens that he just decided to go for it. Which, more power to him. I wish more live low-stakes players played like that.
Yeah. Well, well played by you, honestly. I can't really fault you for any spot there.
Well, you can.
I can't. I don't know. I think you played it fine. So, yeah, a rarity on the Bankroll Burners podcast. But
let's go. Correctly bluff catching without having to say the words "I'm blocking aces."
Without, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Well, let's move it along then. What you got? Yeah. For us?
So, I've got an interesting hand from today's session. From today's session of 2/2. Where I'm 400 effective here with the main villain, so reasonably deep. And it folds all the way to me in this hand, and I'm sitting in the hijack.
So, sorry, how deep are we?
We're 400 effective.
Thanks. I don't know how I missed that. But all right, so folds to you in the hijack.
Yep. And we're sitting with Queen of Clubs, 10 of Spades. And we make it 10, fairly standard here. We get called by the button and the big blind.
Okay. Yep. I'm always happy to raise up some broadways from, you know, and hijack's probably the limit, I would say.
Yeah, I think raising queen 10 offsuit from the low jack starts to be a little hairy.
Yep.
Maybe okay on occasion. But certainly in the hijack, it's, I think, a pure open. So.
Yeah, pretty unfortunate that the button called. So now we're stuck in the middle. So let's hopefully we just drill this flop.
Well, with the flop comes queen of spades, 10 of clubs, deuce of spades.
I thought we had the queen of spades and the 10 of clubs.
Nope, reverse. Queen of clubs, 10 of spades.
Okay, we've got queen of clubs, 10 of spades. Yep, and what's the in the flop is queen of spades,
10 of clubs, deuce of spades.
Okay, so we flop top two.
Yep, we smash it.
On quite a connected board.
Yes. Okay. So big blind checks pretty quickly. And what do you like to do here?
I'm probably betting. I think I'm probably betting 20. Probably okay. Going just because I mean it is kind of one of these spots where you're probably not supposed to bet more than half pot, but like because the pot is so small by like sizing, betting 2/3 and betting half are $5 apart. So I'd probably just bet take the slightly larger sizing. Just to try and extract the most value. Obviously, there are a lot of hands we can get value from. You know, we don't really mind if one person folds and we like kind of clean up some equity. Especially if it's the button that folds. And, you know, we have a very strong hand. So I'm happy to sort of put money in here.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I did end up only betting 15 for kind of the reasons you outlined. You're just not supposed to go very large in theory in a multi-way pot. But I do think that I can, you know, perhaps exploitably just bet 20 because my hand is good and no one's going to really notice much.
Right, yeah. But I think betting 15 is fine. It's like for the same reason that 20 isn't that much bigger, 15 isn't that much smaller either, so it's not going to have huge effects.
Yeah. And we do get called by the button and the big blind folds.
Ah, well, that's still all right to get it to heads up.
Yeah, I'm not super unhappy with the outcome.
Okay, so we still got quite a hefty amount behind, $60 in the pot at this point. Out of position now, heads up, and what's the turn?
The turn is a card I do not like. The turn is the 9 of spades.
Ugh.
Yeah.
So So it completes the kind of most obvious, completes the front door flush draw, and also completes sort of the most obvious straight draw of King Jack.
Yeah.
Okay.
What do you like to do here?
I'd probably check. Probably check. Kind of being out of position and being also the preflop raiser, I think this card is a lot worse for our range. Being like the preflop raiser, the aggressor, and also just out of position, I think it's nice to just have like a lot of checks on this card.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously not planning on going anywhere. You know, probably planning on like check calling with this particular hand, just because it is like, you know, I mean, our opponent can start betting worse for value at this point also. Like our opponent might go bet with like 10-9 or queen 9. And obviously we're ahead of some of those hands, but I'm kind of happy to check, you know, disguise the strength of our hand a little bit and also just play to our range a little bit more.
Yeah, this could be a range check. I mean, what would we even want to bet here? You know, like, I mean, we obviously have some check raises here, like pocket queens, king jack ourselves.
Some like medium spades.
Yep, spades, absolutely. Is our hand a check raise versus like would you check raise our hand?
I don't know. I might just check call just because I feel like our hand has been pretty severely downgraded in terms of sort of relative value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's fair. My thought in game was I don't want to check raise because we are out of position and relatively deep.
Yeah.
So it's not the best idea to be bloating the pot.
Yeah, I don't want to play for 200 big blinds on with like two, even with two, you know, with two pair on a board that's got, you know, a pretty credible straights and flushes.
Yeah. And sets.
Yeah.
I mean, I probably doesn't have pocket nines, but he could. Anyway,
yeah,
I'd
agree.
Check.
So and you check?
I check.
Okay, nice. And I think betting here is probably okay too. If we have hands to bet, I mean, maybe we want to bet this hand, but I don't know. I agree with you. It might just be a range check. Being out of position sucks, man.
Being out of position sucks. So we go ahead and check, and the button bets 25. So just a titch under half pot.
Okay.
And I guess for the reasons we discussed, this is just a call, even though he's taking kind of a smaller sizing.
Yeah, it's weird. Because like the thing is, like on super wet boards like this, sometimes people take smaller sizings. And like sometimes, you know, sometimes even as sort of the preflop aggressor, when you like make your hand, like when you hit your draw on the turn, like you can size down a bit just because it is such a nut changing card and you kind of want to keep your opponent in and, you know, not size down like super. I mean, I wouldn't say below half pot, but, you know, rather than like over betting on a dry turn card.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do think, you know, in hindsight, him taking the smaller sizing, I do think could be indicative that his hand is not that strong.
Yeah.
I think there is maybe a sizing tell here because most players, if like some players will check here with an extremely strong hand, like that's certainly possible. But most players who show up here with a flush, a straight, which he can have plenty of, I think would take a larger sizing.
Sure.
So is there a world here? I mean, so if we could check raise, maybe to extract some value from a queen. But, man, that makes rivers so awkward to play, though.
Yes, it does. I mean, yeah, maybe if we sort of, like, check raise small and plan on, like, checking a lot on rivers.
Like, check to check fold where we win if it goes check, check kind of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, or check evaluate, right? Where if he, like, bets super small again, maybe we call.
Yeah, sure.
So I could be convinced that's the case. I was kind of thinking, you know, we'd want to just check call down if our opponent starts taking a larger sizing. But yeah, it's weird. Yeah. For the smaller sizing, you could probably do some check raising.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. I don't know. Part of me thinks that, like, I mean, because against the sizing too, like, I may have a lot of check raise bluffs. So I do want to have like a good amount of value to do it with. I mean, I'm certainly doing it with sets. I think we can both agree that like if I had tens, queens,
right,
nine, a check raise is probably in order here.
Right.
But do we want to go as low as top two? I don't know.
Right. I don't know how many bluffs we realistically have. Like we don't have that many hands with the ace. But I guess we do have a bunch of hands with the ace of spades, which is certainly good bluffs. You know, nut flush blocker, great, great, great card to bluff, especially when our opponent kind of takes the small sizing and probably doesn't have that many flushes himself. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe some like combo draws, like King X with the King of Spades or something like that.
Sure. Yeah, and maybe I don't have as many bluffs as I think, though. You make a good point. Just with the way the spades are organized, I may not have actually as many bluffs as one might think.
Yeah, and I don't know how many like airball bluffs we necessarily need to have in a case like this.
Yeah. So. Okay. Right.
So I could see a small check raise as sort of an exploit just against the small sizing. Mm-hmm. And obviously also, you know, if we take kind of a smaller sizing here, then we can have a lot more value hands.
Yeah.
Relatively. So maybe that's a possibility. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think check calling is probably the standard play.
Yeah.
Given our range. I think there's maybe an exploitative check raise in here because of the small sizing.
Sure. I think that definitely is possible.
So, but okay. I mean, I'm not unhappy with my decision at the end.
And it sounds like you decide to call.
Okay. Yeah.
Is that right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I just call.
No, don't say okay. I have no idea. This is live, people. I've never heard this hand before.
Yeah. So I do just check call, and I think it's okay based on our discussion here. I think it can't be that bad.
So. Yes, and again, kind of to your point too, as I think about this board, I just think there are so many like gross cards on the river that we don't want to see, and then if we check raise, we've just like bloated the pot out of position, and in, you know, when there really are not that many rivers that we're going to be super comfortable with.
Well, the river is one that we would be super comfortable with. It is the five of clubs, which is a complete brick.
Five of clubs is a complete brick. Yes, it is, unless our opponent's pulling a sick airball bluff with pocket fives.
That's right. Yes, unless that is happening. So what do you think about leading here?
I think it's fine. I think leading here makes a lot of sense. I think this is a quintessential sort of block bet. You know, and I it's because, like, you know, your opponent definitely might check back worse. Opponent can definitely call with horse. And it's kind of one of these things where you kind of take, I think you have to take kind of a small sizing. And you have to just check, you have to check fold.
And you just have to. Bet fold, you mean?
Hmm?
Bet fold.
But you have to bet fold. But I think the idea, I mean, I guess I haven't studied that much on block betting, but I think the idea is basically if we bet and get called and win, that hand likely would have checked back, so we just made an extra however much our block bet is.
Yes, I think that's right. So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, like, I do think that this, if we block here, this is like a block fold. I think if we get raised, we probably are, I mean, we could be getting bluffed, but more likely we're just not good.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you think that's right?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that's right. I think that's kind of the, you know, and I think there is a way to balance block bets where, like, maybe you block, you know, maybe that just means, like, you have to take a block sizing sometimes with, like, flushes here. Like a nut flush that you decided to check call turn with. And, you know, now you're, like, that just means if you want to play balanced and also block, then you have to just kind of mix in some blocking with very strong hands to, like, check raise or check call, or to bet raise or bet call with, rather.
Yeah, right.
Which is hard to balance. It is hard. And sometimes you're like, damn, I could have made so much more, because then, like, he just calls and you get owned.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, no, I think blocking is reasonable here. I think it can be part of a balanced strategy and also maybe more of an exploitative strategy where, based on his sort of sizing tell on the turn, he's very likely to check back this river.
Yeah, well, I think that's the key here is also just, you know, yes, we can do it in a balanced way, but, like, against most live opponents, they're just, when they kind of take this line, they're not going to have enough raised bluffs on the river, so you can much more comfortably fold. And also, you will just get called a lot, and, you know, ranges, calling ranges can sometimes be inelastic on these wet boards, meaning, or yeah, it doesn't matter how much you bet, you're gonna get paid off anyway. So when you have like a nut flush, a nutted kind of hand, you can take a larger size.
Yeah. So we do decide to block here. I with the intention of block folding, I make it 30.
Nice. Yep. I think that sizing, I was gonna say like 35-ish, but I think even a little 30 a little smaller is perfect.
And he goes into the tank for quite some time. And then does the thing where he sort of holds his cards over the muck and calls, and I flip it over and he drops them. So.
Nice. Yeah. Well, great. I mean, I think he definitely would have checked back.
Yeah.
That kind probably. Of hand. So made yourself an extra 30 bucks.
Yeah. Possible could have made a little bit more with a turn check raise. Not sure. So.
Yeah. But, I mean, it is weird because, like, the turn, it's a weird, I don't know if it's a good spot to, like, just start, you know, blasting. You know, it's interesting. I don't really know.
I do find that people fold to turn check raises a lot. It is a
It's because, like, you know, the conventional wisdom is like, oh, people who check raise the turn are just always so strong.
Right.
You know, I had a guy explain at this table that I said was a very good table. He was like quietly explaining his strategy to his neighbor. He was like, yeah, if I have draws, I always raise on the flop. When I have strong hands, I always raise on the turn.
Oh, that's like, really smart of him.
Yeah, I was like, that is definitely unexploitable.
I love, was he like an older guy?
Yeah, you know, middle-aged.
Yeah, he's a coach. That's the player type.
I was like, hell yeah, you tell him, boss.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I don't know. I think I'm like more or less okay with how I played that hand. But I really wanted to bring it on here because I thought maybe I did miss value somewhere. Like, was I supposed to bet turn? Was I supposed to check raise turn?
But it's tough to make like more value from worse hands. You know, like you did win a pot that was like 85 big blinds, with your like top two, like two pair on a very wet board. You know, where the front door flush got there, the most common straight draw got there. You know, the amount of hands that are going to be able to get three streets and what you're going to get three streets from are like, you know, goes down. The volume of hands that you can do that to goes down on a board like this. So I think you kind of, and I struggle with that a lot. Sometimes I just take way too large sizings and just like, you know, lose myself a lot of value because I try to get more and it just totally backfires because that's just kind of how it works on these stupid boards.
Yeah.
So I like the way you played it.
All right, well, we have done two hands that we concluded were played okay, so this is an unacceptable episode of Bankroll Burners.
Well, I mean, this is a great time, then, to remind everyone who's watching this video, you've just watched us, or listened to us, play two hands that we both agree are decent. So, based on that, I think that you should probably like and subscribe.
Exactly. You clearly are enjoying yourself, so it's the right thing to do.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, we look forward to it. It helps out the channel. We hope you've been listening. And by the way, if you are listening, please feel free to start writing up a comment of why our first two hands were in fact unacceptably played.
That's the most likely thing, is that we actually played them wrong. So
yeah, exactly. Great. Yes. Well.
All right. So, got another hand for us here?
I do, and this is. Even this is a pretty interesting one. We're going to be 425 effective in this hand with the main villain. There is no straddle on in this hand. The main villain in this hand is going to be on our left. He is like, he strikes me in our first couple hours of playing as like the quintessential live poker player. He is the one who told me that I had disguised my hand when I raised to only 20 with aces, but 25 to ace king. You know, he was wearing like sports gear and like was totally just like definitely there for a good time, like playing plenty of hands pre-flop and then like, you know, kind of retreating into more of a loose passive, you know, into I guess I'll say passive shell post-flop. You know the type. You all know the type. If you play live poker, you have played with many of this player.
Okay.
So just some background, because I think it does come into
play. Sounds like you're about to get owned is what it sounds like to me.
Well, maybe I own him. Who knows? Right. And by the way, this is my favorite type of player to get owned by, because I am confident that I can often get it back.
Fair enough.
So in this hand, it starts with the low jack opening to 15. The low jack has been fairly active, raising a fair amount, not doing a whole lot of limping. So when I look down at ace queen of clubs in the cutoff, I put in the 3-bet to 50.
Nice.
And I've got ace, queen of clubs, and then the button, who is the main villain, cold calls.
Nice.
And it folds back around to the low jack, who also calls.
So, I guess, low jack also calls, interesting. Okay, so I guess what's interesting here, too, it's a good opportunity to talk about a concept I was learning about this week, which is the idea of condensed ranges, where, somebody's range given a certain set of actions is likely to contain a very small number of hands. And I think that cold calling a 3-bet is a great example of somebody with a condensed range. This player will pretty much only have ace x, where the other card is a Broadway or a suited Broadway, or like nines through jacks. That's pretty much what this player can have, and I don't know. You think that's fair?
Yeah, I think that's almost always the case. I might add some like small suited ace x in
possible
there sometimes, and occasionally suited connectors. I would say not often, but some players certainly like to see flops a bit more than others. But yes, yeah. I think almost always it's going to be some combo of Broadways, medium pocket pairs, and I might throw queens in there too.
Yeah, maybe it's more like eights through queens.
Yeah. And then some like suited broadways and other various suited combos. But I think it's mostly that.
Yeah. So it's very, very condensed range. Like this player. So yeah, it's just something to keep in mind. And then low jack similarly should have quite a condensed range as well. Probably not quite as much though.
Yeah. I think low jack can be a bit wider with like suited hands that they opened just because they are getting a fairly good price, even though they are out of position to both players. Yeah, I think it's, you know, LoJack can probably do some more calling with like suited connector type hands.
Mm-hmm.
But it is worth noting LoJack's range is pretty much always capped where they can't really have the strongest hands because they would have 4-bet.
Yep, absolutely. Okay.
So heading off to the flop, which is quite nice. It's Queen of Spades, 10 of Hearts, 8 of Spades. So Queen 10-8, we make top. There is a straight on the board, but I don't think in this sort of configuration, anyone, myself included, should really have Jack 9.
I think that's probably correct, yeah. I think you can very heavily discount Jack 9. I mean, it could show up, but you probably have the best hand, like, almost always.
Yeah, unless the player who called, you know, either of the players has flopped a set, but we do block top set. There's only one combo of queens left. So, you know, maybe they've got some sort of queen 10 suited hand, but I agree. I think I have the best hand quite often. And for that reason, when the low jack checks, I decide to bet 75.
Okay. The half pot here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's probably fine. I do worry that because of the multi-way nature of it, taking such a large sizing, you may start to fold out some hands that you're hoping to get called by, like, I think if you went a little smaller, you might get some calls from like ace 10, king 10 kinds of hands, or ace jack, you know, which is a gutter, might call you as well. But now when you take kind of a 75 pot, I mean, like, yeah, it's half pot, but again, you know, this is a live environment. People are going to look at that as a fairly large bet. I do think you'll start to fold out some of those hands you could be getting value from.
Yeah, that's definitely possible. I maybe should go smaller. I was more, you know, I was just kind of thinking like, oh, this board is quite wet. Probably want to go on the larger side, you know, if it were heads up. I probably want to play relatively polar where I'm kind of, you know, betting betting a tighter range, but for larger sizing. So because of that, I kind of go on the high end for, you know, for the multi-way environment.
Mm-hmm.
But it's possible I can just kind of go small just because it should be easy to get stacks in because it's a multi-way and a three-bet pot. So maybe that just means I can just bet 50 and keep their ranges in.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you bet 50 here, you'll have no trouble getting stacks in by the river anyway.
So. Yeah, so that's a good. That's definitely a good point. As is, I bet 75 and only the button calls.
Okay. Well, I think that, you know, you could be in a dream spot here where he has something like king-queen suited.
I think it's interesting. It kind of could go either way, like, because obviously he's the button, he's in the middle, he might do some calling also with his nutted hand, so just something to consider. You know, if he does have queens, tens, eights, he might do some calling here. Obviously, it's a wet board, that's a little less likely, but just something
to consider. Yeah, and also because you made it larger, he may not feel the need to raise as much.
Right, to prove that point, there is now about 300 in the pot and 300 behind. So, you know, it is definitely going to be easy to get stacks in at this point, given there's a pot size bet behind. But the turn now comes a card that I'm not super excited to see, which is the Seven of Spades.
So the flush draw comes in.
So the flush draw gets there.
What flushes does he have here, though?
Well, I think he has all sorts of ace X of spades. King Jack of spades.
I mean, you were losing that. Oh, no, sorry, you were not. But, yeah, that's fair.
Maybe Jack 10 of spades. I mean, if we kind of think his range is sort of suited broadways, you know, a lot of suited broadways, I just think, like, you know, that's, like, there are a number of combos. Like, I don't have a spade myself, so any sort of ace-x of spades is there.
I do think he has a ton of, like, on the flop, though, the other part of his range we weren't really discussing is that he probably has a lot of pair plus straight draws.
Right. Yeah, I think so. Like, probably some, like, queen jack, jack 10.
Yeah.
Probably it, I would think.
Well, king jack is not a pair.
It's just a straight draw, but yeah.
Yeah. So queen jack, jack 10, 10-9 maybe. Depending.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I guess I do think that his range at this point is... this card is probably better for him than it is for you, but I think that he still has a ton of bad hands, or worse hands than yours, I guess.
Yes, I guess the issue is like a hand like Jet. The issue for me that I was kind of thinking about was if he does have, I was absolutely thinking about some of those pair plus straight draw hands, but it's also like I don't think that those hands could like call a shove.
Right, that's also very true.
Like it's maybe Queen Jack specifically could, but like, you know, Jack 10, 10-9 possibly, but especially because the front door flush gets there, I think those hands are going to be folded a lot.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be harder for you to get value from those hands. It's interesting to think of, like, can you do, like, what is it? Like, you know, bet a third pot here, you know, and then look to bet, you know, the rest of it on the river. Or you know, something like that. Or 125, you know, do 125 here and then get the rest in on the river. Something like that. So he's sort of forced to call down kind of wide.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we're targeting a queen, we definitely can. But so I kind of decide that this might just be a good time to, like, range check. Just kind of based on his, like, how condensed his range should be. I think we'll kind of get a good sense of... You know, his, like, based on what he does, I think this is a great spot to, like, check evaluate, just because, like, a lot of his range here is either, like, paired up or, like, nutted. And I think that he's going to be checking back a lot of pairs. Like, I kind of a live, you know, exploit. I mean, I don't know if it's an exploit. You know, it's weird, right? Because he cold called a 3-bet, so we're probably in squarely in exploit land. And I was kind of thinking, live players are just not going to be bluffing pairs enough. So, you know, when I check, like, if he checks back, I can probably, like, jam safe rivers. Like,
right, because there's nothing you're going to try to get value from right now that you, like, won't be able to get value from in the river. Like, the only thing I can think of is, like, king, queen with a spade if it will somehow fold river.
Right, which is unlikely, I think.
Yeah, so...
So okay. I decide to check, but I don't really know. Like, maybe I should just be like bet small because like, you know, the effective stacks are so small and I should just like suck it up. But it's just like such a weird, like such kind of like weird board where there just are like, you know, it's I feel like it's gonna be tough to get three full streets of value. But I don't know.
I mean, so what would you do here if you had a flush yourself?
Right. Well, I mean, I think I could probably check. I think I can check flushes here just with like a, you know, 1-to-1 SPR and either like check jam if he bets small or check call if he jams or just again plan on sort of jamming river.
And then if you also had like some kind of ace X with like the ace of spades, you know, but like, would you also just check with plans of like maybe making a move on the river if he checks back, something like that?
Yeah, and I do think it is kind of, I mean, I think that, I think it is kind of a little whack just because the SPR is so low. Like, it obviously we like ace, I think ace X, like the ace of spades is sort of the hand that like suffers the most from checking range because like if he jams, we can't really call.
Absolutely, yeah, right.
Which sucks. But if he jams, I would expect that we're like super far, like that we're drawing slim anyway.
I mean, if you have a flush here, there's not a lot of hands to get value from on the turn that you can't get on the river, so it makes sense to check your nutted hands here.
Right.
And therefore, it probably makes sense to check your junk. So
yes, but this is obviously, I mean,
this is neither junk nor nutted. That's where the out of position turn strategy is really weird. It's like, am I supposed to bet?
Right, like, but then it's like weird, like SPR is so low. It's like, can we bet? I mean, I guess we'd have to bet fold if we did bet.
Oh, if you go 125 here and he rips it on you, you're not good. I would say.
So I really don't know. This is kind of a spot where I was like, well, I'm not really sure what I should be doing here.
Yeah.
And my thought, by the way, my in-game thought as I check turn is basically, you know, if he jams, like, I might have to fold because, like, I just don't see him turning, like, a pair into a bluff all that often. And then, like, what bluffs does he have left?
Right.
Like, we'd basically be calling for a chop.
Yeah. I think I like your check here. I think I do like the idea of range checking.
And I would check call a small bet. and then like expect him to give up on rivers a lot with bluffs.
Yeah, I think you can do that. So
I check and he bets 100. And I will say, obviously this is a small bet. I will say my live read on him was that he was this was a like kind of absolute bet sizing thing where like in his mind he was not like, I'm gonna bet a third of the pot. He was like, I am gonna slam this stack of reds on the table. Like
Yeah.
You know, he I would say from my point of view, he was like, this was not a small bet that he intentionally made.
Yeah.
This was like $100.
Yeah, I mean, is he bluffing here 1 out of 4 times? Is he bluffing here 1 out of 5 times? One out of 5 times, is this a bluff where he will give up on the river? Because that's what the you will fold to a river shove, I assume.
I think I have to, and I kind of think that my thought process is, if he's bluffing, his bluffs are probably kind of the hands that you've outlined, like Jack 10, 10, 9, and those hands are just, or like maybe like he's going wild with like pocket jacks or pocket nines, and I just see those hands checking back a lot on the river, being like, well, I beat like ace king.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I think I'm fine with the call. I don't love it. I kind of hate it. Like, I feel like...
But I just don't think I'm allowed to fold to this turn sizing.
Yeah, it sucks. I think that we are going to lose here at least 80% of the time. So, okay. Which, you know, that's what we got to lose. So you call.
Right. Yep. So now there's 500 in the pot. There's 200 behind. The river now comes the 6 of diamonds, which is not exactly a brick. I mean, now there's a one-liner out there to a 9. So the final board, queen of spades, 10 of hearts, 8 of spades, 7 of spades, 6 of diamonds. So any 9 makes a straight. There are 3 spades on the board. We have got ace-queen suited, ace-queen of clubs. And when we check, villain goes ahead and rips it in for around 200.
I mean, how can we be good?
And I just kind of think I feel like we do have enough better hands to call with. We're like, even if I have ace queen with the ace of spades, I think we can just check call. You know, I think we have like enough flushes ourselves that we might check call turn like with some nut flushes. You know, maybe we've got, I don't know if we've got any like 9x here. Probably not. I don't know. Maybe pocket nines with a spade.
Ace
maybe.
Nine something. Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe three bet, so I guess pocket nines with a spade is probably going to be about it.
Yeah.
But I mean, pocket nines with a spade, I think, is definitely a call here.
Yeah.
King-queen with a spade is probably a better call than ace-queen of clubs.
Yeah, because he's never doing this with ace-queen himself, so... Right. Okay, I mean...
But I don't know. Yeah. We're also getting a great price. Like, maybe, am I just supposed to call and say, like, well, can I win here 20% of the time?
I don't think so. I actually think you can overfold this spot, to be honest with you. Like, I think you can even, like, this is just such an underbluffed line from a live player, I would say.
Yeah. Well, I do fold. I basically decide, you know, I just have tons of hands here with spades, like aces, kings, ace queen, king queen, like plenty of hands here that can call. I fold, and he immediately gets this look on his face like, oh, he's totally full of it. So I tell him to show the bluff, and he does flip over King 10 offsuit with a spade.
Wow. You got owned.
Yeah, I did. I got absolutely owned.
All right.
Well, so I was like, wow, heck, you know, great. Tons of credit to him. He made a sick bluff with, like, turned his 10 and one spade into a bluff. Geometrically, almost.
Yeah, with geometric sizing. Look at you. Yeah, that's crazy. I mean...
So it's like, yeah, I don't really feel bad about it. Like, obviously, if I, you know, I didn't really have a chance to play more against him and, like, pick off more of these random bluffs. But, you know, I always think, you know, it's always funny to me when I'm, like, reading discussions online or, like, you know, YouTube comments or whatever where people are like, ah, live players never bluff. And I'm like, no, live players just don't always bluff sensibly. Mm-hmm. You know, like, this to me is a hand where villain probably said, I'm going to bluff this kid. You know, maybe as early as his cold call preflop, he was like, I can't wait to bluff the shoes off this kid. You know what I mean? Like, he just decided, absolutely, I don't care what happens. I'm putting my stack in the middle, which is awesome. And it's a great, those type of live players are just almost always so good for the game.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And man, I don't think there's anything we can do there. I mean, even against a GTO bot, I think you've got to fold. So.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, really well played DM. It's like a cool, little hand.
Nice. Well, I guess I can take us home here.
Hopefully you have a hand that we played just that you played inexcusably poorly.
Well,
I'm just kidding. You know, it's
this hand is an interesting one. I dwelled on it a lot. You can tell me whether it's just inexcusably poor or excusably poor. So
sounds good.
So it's very late. It's about 3 a.m. We're playing like five-handed. And we're 450 effective. And this is a 2-2-4. So straddle is on. I'm in the straddle.
Okay.
I shouldn't be in this game. There's like one player with chips in front with like a decent stack in front of him, but I'm in this game for some reason. So and I have 10-7 of hearts in the straddle.
Oh boy.
So we're a little over 100 straddles effective here.
Right.
And the straddle have been on a lot, so you know, you could think about it as like 100.
It's 3 a.m., I'd expect that.
Yeah, so the cutoff, who is first to act, folds. The button, who is playing some ABC Pokerino, goes to 15, folds back to us, and we call.
Sure. It's fine.
Yeah. The flop is the Queen of Diamonds, the Nine of Spades, and the Eight of Hearts.
Flop is Queen of Diamonds, Nine of Spades, Eight of Hearts. So it's pretty good. We flop an open-ender with a backdoor.
Yeah, I thought it was all right.
Yeah.
Of course, if a jack comes, we will not have the nuts straight.
And it'll be a one-liner, so it'll be pretty difficult to get paid.
Yeah.
Or not necessarily pretty difficult, but more difficult.
Yeah.
Than exactly. If a six comes, for example.
Yes, yeah. So six would be a much better card than a jack. So... do we have any leads here?
Maybe. This is a board we can probably lead sometimes, but it's quite interesting. Like, I feel like when I play live poker, this is kind of an aside, but also kind of not an aside. I feel like the concept that has finally gotten through to, like, all live players is c-betting.
Mm-hmm.
And they just always c-bet. You know what right. I mean? Like, there are so few checkbacks. From preflop aggressors. It's like people have learned, it's kind of like pot odds. You know, I think we commented in an early episode of this podcast that live players understand pot odds and then apply them inexcusably poorly. Like, yeah. people understand c-bets and then, like, just c-bet one-third on, like, jack 10-9.
Interesting. So your argument would be like, well, let's, like, if we would lead here, let's just check raise.
But yeah, but I don't mind. But with that said, I think you can also lead, and you know, maybe there still are ways to lead, and it's probably player dependent. But that's just something I've noticed, is that a lot of players know how to c-bet and apply it quite liberally.
I think that's fair.
Because like this is a board where the preflop raiser probably has quite a few checkbacks.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely should, I would think.
Yeah, right. Absolutely should. But this is also a board where many live players would happily like triple barrel bluff with ace king.
So if we check here, are you check raising?
I think so. This seems like one of our better bluffs.
Okay. I think that's fair. I don't lead here. I was just kind of curious what your thoughts on that were.
I could go either way. I mean, if we want to have a leading range, I think this hand fits pretty nicely, you know what?
Okay. Well, we check and?
He checks back. And that's fine too.
Eating your words, Josh.
Yeah, I mean, it is player dependent, and I'm sure it's location dependent too. Maybe it's, you know, just us learned folk in Boston.
Yeah.
And not you backwoods Florida.
Oh my god, get out of here. Jeez. No, he does check back. So, and this player, like I said, had been playing quite ABC. So,
okay, and that's true too. It's, you know, there are definitely players who just like bet when they hit.
Yeah. So the turn rolls off the Nine of Clubs.
Okay.
What do you think we should do?
I mean, I could probably go either way here. I think if he checked back flop, he's probably got a pretty weak hand, so he can probably just bluff him up, start bluffing and bluff him off it. But also, I think he probably has some nines and some eights in his check back range. You know, it's not necessarily a scenario where the nine pairing is significantly better for us.
Interesting.
We probably do have slightly more nines in our range, but I think a big part, you know, I know, like, there are a lot of opportunities to sort of lead turns when the middle card pairs, but I think that's specific to, like, when we check and sort of defend again against a c-bet, because players are less likely to c-bet with sort of the middle pair type hands. But I don't mind leading anyway, because, like, if this player is ABC, like, he should just have a ton of misses that he's going to fold by the river.
Yeah, what kind of, so if you were going to bet here, like, what kind of sizing would you take?
I'd probably go pretty big. Probably about, like, 25.
Yeah, I mean, I decided to go big here. I was in agreement. I bet 30. I bet pot.
Yeah, I think that's... Because, like, the thing is, like, this guy might, you know, a lot of players would probably see bet hands like, you know, King Jack, King 10, like, all these sort of guttery hands. But maybe this player just doesn't want to bet, you know, doesn't bet those just because they're playing a little bit more straightforward, betting more when they hit.
Yeah, and which against maybe those sorts of strategies, maybe a smaller bet is actually more efficient because.
Sure.
But I guess my thought too was like maybe he can get with a larger bet. Like maybe he's only betting like his queens. Mm-hmm. So I can maybe fold out like jacks with a large bet. Or something like that.
Yeah, but you know, you make an interesting point because I think against sort of any of that range, kind of going small on turn, big on river is probably going to get those hands to fold by then.
Interesting. So if we're setting up a double barrel here, yeah.
If we're setting up a double barrel anyway, because and then yeah, maybe he doesn't fold a hand like King Jack to like 15 here, but he has to on the river, you know, if we bet large and he doesn't improve. So I don't know. Maybe there's an argument to just kind of go small into big, but and yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, when he checks back, you know, he should be fairly weak. So why bet large? I mean, honestly, like,
yeah.
The more I think about it, the more I think that betting large doesn't make sense. So, you know, and I think that, which wasn't even, like, originally one of my criticisms of how I played this hand. So now it's just, like, you know, could it, I guess this is just an excuse.
I mean, it's a minor thing, but you never know how sizings on one street are going to just, like, cascade out of control.
Yeah, so I think I should have bet, like, 15 here, probably. I mean, 10.
Because I think we can do that with a lot of our, like, Queen X also. And, like, definitely only 9X. Just kind of bet small, make sure we keep all his hands in, and then bet big on river to, like, put all his, like, weak queens or pairs below that in a pretty tough spot.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think this was a sort of a butchered street. But the opponent goes into the tank for a while on this bet and eventually lands on a call.
Okay. Could mean, like, anything. Yeah, I try not to put too much credence into check calls, because you know, into tank calls rather, because it like could mean they're thinking about raising or folding.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or Hollywooding.
Yeah, also possible.
Okay, so there's piles and piles behind. There's 90 in the pot, and what? And how's the river looking?
The river is a brick. It's the 5 of clubs.
Okay. Well, I think I just want to bet here.
Okay.
We can reasonably rep 6-7 as well as 10-jack with our particular hand. Because both those hands are straights now on queen 9-8-9-5. And I just think we're going to put a lot of his hands in a pretty tough spot. So I might even take a bigger sizing here, like maybe pot again.
Would you consider overbetting?
I don't know, because I don't know. Like, I feel like on a paired board, the overbet should be more tied to, like, the boat type hands.
Well, who has more boats here, I guess, as played? Who do you think?
Probably you.
I mean, what are the boats? Like, we've got...
Like, 9-8.
9-8.
Queen-9, pocket eights. Pocket queens, I guess. He could have pocket... I guess villain has more pocket queens.
Yep, sure.
Like, villain... villain can credibly have pocket queens from his line, but wouldn't think he has a lot of 9-8 or pocket eights.
Or queen nine.
Or queen nine. Those all seem like hands that should fast play the flop.
Yeah, so I kind of think I have more boats here.
But we don't have any... Like, I feel like if we're trying to rep boats, we might want, like, blockers.
Like a boat blocker, like 10-8.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Maybe, like, we have a overbet size... We do have an overbet sizing on this river, but it is not with our holding. Like, right. we have two sizes here, which is, like, a smaller size, which is probably like 2/3. Although we are out of position, so it could be we could do like a block capsizing as
and it's
well.
Weird. Maybe, I don't know, do you think we could overbet with, like, Trips? Or do you think Trips would want to bet? Like, what do you think Trips would want to do here?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Probably don't want to over... Well,
because, like, it's interesting, right? Because straights, it seems like, from what I just said, maybe straights want to take the sort of 75% to 100% pot. Boats want to overbet, but, like, Trips are weaker than straights, but Trips also block a lot of our opponent's boats, and you'd think our opponent probably... I guess our opponent could have 10-jack sometimes. Like, sometimes people just freeze up when they flop the nuts, you know?
Yeah, it probably doesn't make a ton of sense to overbet with Trips. So we probably do want to take a chunkier sizing with our straight. We probably don't want to have a blocker size here.
Yeah.
We probably have a 2/3 to 3/4 type of size, which we take with our Trips, with our straights. And then we have a overbet sizing, which we take with our boats.
Right.
We probably don't have a block sizing on this river is what I'm getting.
Yeah, I guess what I'm, one thing I'm thinking of is it does feel like it's tough. I don't know if we have enough boat blockers that want to bluff. But I guess that we don't have that many boats either. I'm just thinking, you know, like, maybe we do need to put some, like, straight blocker hands into the overbet sizing. Because, like, how much 8x do we have? Because that's pretty much it, right? Like, 8x is really the only boat block. Like, we don't want to bluff queen x here.
No, for sure.
Right? I mean, so that means our only...
Are we checking queen x mostly?
Probably. That's probably fine.
Feels,
Well, maybe we can block with queens, especially live.
Yeah, I mean, it might be like you're supposed to check queens, but, like, maybe we can exploitatively make a small value boat.
In the spirit of going thin, thin, thin.
Yeah. Okay, but yeah, it's interesting. The idea is, like, okay, do we need to have some overbet straight? And, like, what would those hands be, though? Like, I actually don't think... It's probably not 10-7, though.
Sure, quite possibly.
It's probably, like... I don't know. King 10 probably is better.
Why do you say that?
Because we're blocking, like, king queen.
I guess too, because 10-7 has blockers to both straights, so it makes sense to take more straighty sizing. I don't know. That seems like it's just words.
Yeah, it's just saying words. I don't really know. I mean.
And maybe we can just overbet straights, too. Like, maybe we can just kind of... Maybe we can just kind of say he doesn't have that many boats here. Like, the way he's played it, he really should only have queens full and nothing else. So maybe that means we can just simplify and overbet both.
Yeah, overbet straights and boats and take a block. And then we do have maybe a block sizing with a queen. And then, I don't know what we do with a nine. Maybe also a block sizing with a nine.
Yeah, maybe.
All right, well...
So I don't know. It's kind of interesting. I could kind of see either. I don't really... This is why this is more of the bankroll burners analysis the people crave.
We were just like, I don't know. Yeah, I do think that I can't be doing it with all my bricked straight draws, though. I mean, like we have so many. We have King Jack, you know, 10-7.
Yeah, we have, like, Jack, like, X.
Ace 10. Yeah. Like Ace Jack. Like, we have so many bricked straight draws. Like, we definitely don't want to do this with all of them. So we probably want to do it with the ones that at least block, like, his strong queens and his nines. So that would be, like, Ace Jack and King Jack. Because he probably won't fold a nine. So, like, we probably want to block at some nines. So, like, we have an Ace Jack, we block Ace Nine. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. Because 10-7 also, like, it's like, you know, at least we have a 10 and a 7. I don't even know if that's good.
I don't know. I think it's probably bad because we're blocking his brick draws, if I had to guess.
Yeah, but he also can have some, like, 6-7 and Jack 10.
You're right. So right. Yeah.
So I think I'm probably okay with just, like, bombing here and just like having a lot of bombs because of how weak our opponent played this hand. And just say, okay, like, oh, you're going to slow play Jack 10? Like, okay. Like, 150. Like, have fun.
Yeah. I do think that, like, us taking this turn size, like, the large turn sizing and him calling does make his range seem a little less weak, though.
Right.
I don't know. I think a smaller turn sizing was definitely important. I think it's may have been, like, sort of my critical error in this hand. But anyway, I did decide to take an overbet sizing. Not a huge overbet. I just went 100. I definitely could have gone bigger, and I should have gone bigger. I don't know why I only bet 100. Probably because it was 3 a.m.
Yeah, one chip.
Yeah.
Or one stack.
Easy. Exactly. I was like, eh.
You are a villain from the last hand.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, I get to slide a stack out. Heck yeah.
Anyway, villain goes, does the like sort of like hemming and hawing thing.
Oh boy. Sounds like he's gonna jam.
And then he makes it 200.
Okay.
So obviously we snap muck.
Okay.
And he rolls over pocket queens.
All right. Well, I mean, that's fine. Like, yeah. I do kind of thinking about it. Like, I am kind of okay with just betting big with a lot of hands, because like he will sometimes have pocket queens here, and he will sometimes have jack 10 here, and he will very occasionally, and he will probably also sometimes have 6-7. But like, when we overbet, like 6-7 is definitely in a crappy spot. Jack 10 is in a moderately crappy spot, and pocket queens is obvious. Like, whatever, we run into pocket queens, like. So be
it. Oh yeah, I'm upset about that. Like, it is what it is.
So I'm probably, if we make like a real over bet here, I'm probably okay with that. You know, like a 133 or 150%
pot. Yeah, for sure. Like, I actually think that, but the problem is like, we go back to this turn sizing, and I think this is why it's such a mistake, because if I bet small on turn, he shows up here with so many more hands that are vulnerable to this over bet.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe we may bet small, and then we just really jam, like we don't jam, but we like smoke him. You know,
yeah, we could jam, it's possible.
Yeah,
I don't know, maybe that'd be maybe.
We would definitely need to actually figure out what hands we want to jam with.
Yeah
that it's interesting, right? It's almost like it's like over bets and like three bet and four bet pots. Dear listeners, and also dear Mike, you can have, you're just EV, the EV of playing these pots is just so important because the pots are so big. Like in pots where you jam, you just need to, like, this is, I think I was listening to the Upswing podcast and I was like, wow, that's such a good point. And then like, I don't know, I've probably still been spewing in those spots, but at least I've been thinking about it. Like, you know, if you make a small mistake in like a single raise pot and like, you know, there's two streets of value instead of one, you don't lose that much EV. But if you like make a big mistake in like, you know, jamming instead of betting like pot, you, that's like a lot of expected value lost by doing that. Or like, yeah, in a three bet pot where you're more likely to play for stacks, knowing when to bet 10% pot versus like 40% pot is like going to be the difference between like losing your stack or losing a small amount.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. No, these are really good points. And yeah, I think it is important to think about like how we are structuring our overbet range. Like, do we really want to, you know, use 10-7, or would we rather use, you know, something else? But
right, so that's just something that we'd need to know, I think, if we decided to jam here, is like, yes, this is my over bet, this is my jam, and I'm actually jamming the right combo of bluffs and value to make this make sense.
And it probably isn't 10-7 a bet.
Right, or deviating appropriately from GTO to capitalize on my opponent, but
yeah, but obviously we got wrecked. And that's pretty par for the course here at Bankroll Burners. So I think that'll about do it.
Yeah. Thanks. You know, thanks for sticking with us, everyone. And we'll see you next week.
See you next week.